Good morning. This is Brian Trumbor with your Week in Review for Saturday, February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. I've written the past 2 weeks in my Week in Review column that President Barack Obama had just 25 days to prove himself. So now that the honeymoon is over, he can't help but wonder if there will be a divorce in 2012. I mean, let's face it, his honeymoon with the American people, short as it was due to the economic crisis, was a bit rocky. Outside observers tell us it got testy, a lot of he said, she said. Obama, from time to time, even dressed down those he had previously been courting. If he can't get along in the first few weeks, how's he going to manage the next 4 years? Our country, and the world for that matter, can't take a Liz Taylor, Richard Burton production after all. Depression would then be the least of our worries. But the president can at least claim victory in getting a stimulus package through, all $787 billion of it, many details of which are still under wraps as I do this chat. It's not easy drafting a final bill of 1,100 pages, much of it crapola, into something coherent for our leader to sign. It's done, though, with literally just one handful of Republicans out of 535 members of Congress supporting it. And what the Federal Reserve Board's monetary policy hasn't been able to accomplish to date, fiscal policy is expected to in moving our economy off the dime. Two big initial questions: will the combination of the massive and unprecedented monetary and fiscal stimulus finally unfreeze the credit markets? And second, just how do we pay for it all? Answering the second question first, at least Liu Ping, a Chinese banking official, told the Financial Times that China would continue to buy treasuries in spite of its misgivings about Washington's profligacy. Excuse me. Except for U.S. treasuries, what can you hold? He asked. Gold. You don't hold Japanese government bonds or U.K. bonds. U.S. treasuries are the safe haven for everyone, including China. It is the only option. And thank you, People's Republic of China, serving communists since 1949. As for whether or not the stimulus program, all in, will work, as well as a take on the mood in the country, following is some opinion, first from George Will, The Washington Post. John McCain probably was eager to return to the Senate as an avatar of bipartisanship, a role he has enjoyed. It is therefore a measure of the recklessness of House Democrats that they caused the stimulus debate to revolve around a bill that McCain dismisses as generational theft. The federal government, with its separation of powers and myriad blocking mechanisms, was not made for speed but for safety, Will writes. This is particularly pertinent today because if $787 billion is spent ineffectively or destructively, government does not get to say oops and take a mulligan. Senate Republicans have slowed and altered the course of the disaster catastrophe stampede. Still, as Anthony Trollope wrote in one of his parliamentary novels, the best carriage horses are those which can most steadily hold back against the coach as it trundles down the hill. Will continues, not yet a third of the way through the president's first 100 days, he and we should remember that it was not FDR's initial burst of activity in 1933 that put the phrase 100 days into the Western lexicon. It was Napoleon's frenetic trajectory in 1815 that began with his escape from Elba and ended near the Belgian village of Waterloo. Gerald Seib of the Wall Street Journal. To Commander-in-Chief and Economist-in-Chief, President Barack Obama now has a chance to add this title to his portfolio, Psychologist-in-Chief. In the story of the Obama administration, this week will go down as one in which the president's team succeeded in getting the deal it absolutely had to have with Congress on an economic stimulus package. The process wasn't always pretty, but by historical standards, the speed in passing a signature economic measure is impressive. This also is a week in which the administration flatly failed in its effort to sell Wall Street on a parallel plan to stabilize financial markets. And when it saw Senator Judd Gregg become the third cabinet nominee to pull the plug before taking office. Seib continues, on all those fronts, though, the psychological strain has been significant. Put simply, average Americans as well as the financial markets look more than a little scared right now. While that fear actually has been useful for Mr. Obama in pushing through the stimulus plan, it now may be time to engage in a little Franklin Roosevelt style, all we have to fear is fear itself, soothing. If anything, the problem for the Obama team was that there was too much optimism, considering the circumstances. Excessive optimism could translate into excessive expectations that the new president could turn things around quickly. Excessive expectations become dashed expectations, which are politically fatal. Saib continues, so the new president began throwing some cold water. Mr. Obama began talking of an economic slump that could last years and using words such as catastrophe to describe what might unfold. If the goal was to head off irrational exuberance, it worked. The grim language served another purpose. It was designed to create a sense of urgency in Congress to get the stimulus bill passed quickly. If Rome is burning, nobody would want to be seen doing too much fiddling. That was Gerald Saib of the Wall Street Journal. The chaos of the week, however, was best summed up in two episodes. President Obama toured the Caterpillar plant in Peoria, Illinois, telling employees that if the stimulus passed, he had been promised that their boss, CEO Jim Owens, would rescind some of the 22,000 layoffs previously announced. Then, no sooner is Obama out the door, off to play Lincoln, when Owens addresses the troops and says more, not fewer, layoffs are probably in the offing. No one ever said being president is easy. Then you had Timothy Geithner's screen test, the unveiling of the bank bailout aspect of the Rescuing America Before It Totally Goes Up in Flames plan. Any Hollywood director viewing the performance would have immediately told Mr. Geithner, don't call us, we'll call you. And Sophie, bring in the tall guy, Mr. Volker. Last Sunday, in watching Flight 1549, Captain Chesley Sullenberger on 60 Minutes explained how he pulled off his miracle when he said, my entire life had been in preparation for that moment. Alas, we have been told the same thing about Geithner, that his whole career had set him up for this time. He had been most intimately involved with the financial crisis, unlike any other player in America today, yet what followed was both pathetic and embarrassing. Or as Gerald Saib put it, it took Treasury Secretary Geithner only about an hour Tuesday to take the financial markets to their own parallel state of declining confidence. The lack of convincing detail in the announcement of his plan to spend remaining funds to rescue financial markets left Wall Street with more than a paucity than an audacity of hope. Paul Krugman of the New York Times. The plan sketched out by Tim Geithner wasn't bad, exactly. What it was instead was vague. It left everyone trying to figure out where the administration was really going. Will those public-private partnerships end up being a covert way to bail out bankers at taxpayers' expense? Or will the required stress test act as a backdoor route to temporary bank nationalization, the solution favored by a growing number of economists, myself included? Nobody knows. Krugman continues, overall, the effect was to kick the can down the road, and that's not good enough. So far, the Obama administration's response to the economic crisis is all too reminiscent of Japan in the 1990s, a fiscal expansion large enough to avert the worst, but not enough to kickstart recovery. Support for the banking system, but a reluctance to force banks to face up to their losses. It's early days yet, but we're falling behind the curve. And I don't know about you, but I've got a sick feeling in the pit of my stomach, Krugman writes, a feeling that America just isn't rising to the greatest economic challenge in 70 years. The best may not lack all conviction, but they seem alarmingly willing to settle for half measures. And the worst are, as ever, full of passionate intensity, oblivious to the grotesque failure of their doctrine and practice. There's still time to turn this around, but Mr. Obama has to be stronger looking forward. Otherwise, the verdict on this crisis might be that, no, we can't. That was Paul Krugman of the New York Times. President Obama evidently is going to unveil details of a foreclosure mitigation plan on Wednesday, and one would hope Mr. Geithner quickly enunciates some further details of his own. On the global front, China reported some miserable figures for January, with exports down 17.5% and imports a sickening 43%. However, the data is greatly skewed by the Lunar New Year, which fell early this year. There's actually been a shred of optimism that China may be playing a little LIFO game, last in recession, first out, such as in bank lending is way up. That has been my own belief, and with my god-awful to-date investment in Fujian China, I'm putting my last dollars where my mouth is. Meanwhile, Japan is due to report GDP for the fourth quarter this week, and it should be dreadful. The head of their central bank said his nation faces an unimaginable contraction. And across the pond, GDP for Q4 declined 1.5% for the Eurozone, with Germany down 2.1%, Italy 1.8%, France 1.2%, and Spain 1.0%. Spain officially joined the recession crowd, and it's now projected housing there has another 20% to fall. Oh, how I nailed this bubble years ago, and all it took was chatting up blokes in pubs across Europe to put it all together. All the Brits, Irish, and Germans I came across, for example, were talking of second homes in Spain. By the third pint, it sunk in. This weekend, Timothy Geithner actually has a chance to redeem himself a bit with his first appearance before the G7 in Rome. At the forefront of debate here, aside from what each is doing to handle their respective banking crises, is protectionism. As a Czech Republic leader put it this week, the Czechs holding the EU presidency currently, the biggest risk at the moment is the risk of protectionism. Meetings such as the G7 and an upcoming EU summit are often derided, but there are times when they can be useful, such as now. Better they talk the issues out face-to-face than strictly through the press. Another opportunity occurs in April with the newly powerful G20. As far as the week on Wall Street, blame the carnage solely on the Treasury Secretary, because the losses all came on Tuesday when Geithner gave his non-explanation of the bank bailout program. Otherwise, stocks largely treaded water. But because of Tuesday's downdraft, the Dow Jones finished at 7850, down 5.2% for its lowest weekly close since March 2003. The S&P 500 lost 4.8%, and NASDAQ fell 3.6%. For the year, NASDAQ is off just 2.7%, but the Dow is already off 10.5%. One word on Friday's action. Financials fell hard yet again, as Lloyds Banking Group said HBOS, or HBOS, the lender it took over just last month, will be reporting a massive loss, while Wells Fargo revised its fourth quarter results to reflect further credit-related losses of its own, Wells heretofore being one of the few quality names in the sector. That's your Week in Review for today. Catch more of it at stocksandnews.com. Talk to you next week.